Golf Today.
Golf Today on a Monday. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week Magazine. Hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. You know, in college, you put on the freshman 15. I put on the Thanksgiving 10. You, meanwhile, playing golf down in Mexico. Must have been nice.
I was down at Diamante in Cabo, hit about 2,000 balls. I can report a little bit of swing progress. Wow. Maybe not the breakthrough I was hoping for. You were hitting balls in Orlando. I saw you posted that little over-the-top wipey swing of yours.
I was at the Ritz-Carlton, my club, and listen, hard right-to-left wind, not easy, but I was hitting butter cuts a la Scottie Scheffler, working the ball toward the flagstick, baby.
There was no wind affecting the ball flight that I saw, Damon. That was all swing. Some of the world's best will tee it up in the Bahamas in the Hero World Challenge. That includes the world number one, Scottie Scheffler. Live coverage coming your way Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern time here on Golf Channel. And here are the field notes. Just 20 players in the field this week. Scottie Scheffler, of course, headlining, the two-time defending champion. Tiger Woods has won it five times, but he is not in the field this week. Albany in the Bahamas has been the host venue for 10 years, the first $5 million.
As mentioned, Tiger, the host for the Hero, we expect to hear from him later this week, possibly tomorrow. Now, while Tiger won't be teeing it up this week, he does have five victories in this event, with the last one coming back in 2011. So much going on this week in the Bahamas, and Todd Lewis will be on site all week for Golf Channel. He joins us now. Great to see you, buddy. While we're nearing the end of this year, there could be some big changes, as we understand, coming to the PGA Tour schedule in the future. What more can you tell us?
Well, Damon, the schedule is already set for 2026. But in regards to 2027, we could see a much different PGA Tour schedule. I want to go back to August at Eastlake for the Tour Championship. New CEO Brian Rolapp addressed the media. And during his address, he used the word scarcity as one of his pillars for success on the PGA Tour. And that raised a lot of eyebrows. Is he talking about reducing tournaments on the PGA Tour schedule? He also announced at Eastlake the formation of what he called the PGA Tour Future Competition Committee. That's a nine-person committee, six of the nine PGA Tour players, and it is chaired by Tiger Woods. Now, I can tell you that that committee has met multiple times with the intention of reducing the PGA Tour schedule, eliminating tournaments. They are brainstorming right now, but the intent is to have a smaller schedule on the PGA Tour. And Brian Rolapp is the engine behind this. He has met with sponsors that this would affect. He has met with head of media partners, the networks, on how that will affect them. And he is pushing for this to happen. There's several reasons why. He feels like it's a better economic plan with a smaller schedule. And of course, he came from the NFL. He understands the Goliath that the NFL is. And the PGA Tour doesn't really want to compete against the NFL. And like I said, that committee has met several times. They are planning to meet again later this month. Brian Rolapp is scheduled to be on site here in Albany for the Hero World Challenge. And you can bet he's going to talk to many of the elite players in the field here about his intent, again, to reduce the schedule starting in 2027. As for Tiger Woods, well, he is the host of the Hero World Challenge. He will have a press conference tomorrow morning. He will be on that stage behind me. And sure, he will get asked about his health. He's coming off his seventh back surgery. But he will also be asked about the future of the PGA Tour schedule, considering he is chairing that PGA Tour Futures Competition Committee. So it will be quite an interesting Tuesday. But as of now, the question is, if there will be fewer tournaments on the PGA Tour schedule, the bigger question is how many, and the when it looks like is going to be 2027.
Todd, you mentioned Tiger will have his press conference. He's obviously in this committee role doing a lot of administrative business in the game these days. Is there any sense at all when we may actually see him inside the ropes again as a competitor?
Well, there have been whispers about him possibly competing in the PNC Championship. If you remember, in October, he had that lumbar disc replacement surgery. That's a pretty significant surgery. That's a seventh surgery on his back. But, I mean, if he was going to compete in that, he can't take really hard, violent, full swings. He would have to rely on his son, Charlie, who, of course, is a great junior player, to hit all the big drives and probably the significant shots in the fairway, and Tiger may be only be able to hit wedges and chip and putt. But I don't know if that's a possibility, given, again, it's his seventh back surgery. It probably is not wise for him to go out and compete, even if it's just with short clubs and a putter. I don't anticipate him playing any more golf. He might just shut it down this year and try to get ready for 2026. But he will be asked that tomorrow. We will find out formally if Tiger Woods is going to play at all in 2025 or if he's just going to try to recover and maybe come back next year.
We'll see what happens. I was just at the Ritz, as mentioned. The grandstands are being built. No doubt hopeful that Tiger will play. Much more from Todd from the Bahamas in just a little bit. And how about the schedule, Eamon? Because so much about the PGA Tour history has been about creating opportunities and pathways. This idea of scarcity and escaping the shadow of the National Football League, it sounds like constriction is coming.
Yeah, which for core golf fans can be an odd debate, because there is an audience for tournaments, even if it's not the same audience of scale there is in the meat of the season. But, you know, I would count myself as someone who would happily watch events in the fall or in the winter. I don't really care about football. There is an audience for it. But whether or not it's diluting the main product, I think, is part of the core question that the tour is asking itself. There's clearly going to be a contraction. The question, Damon, is how extreme is it? And is this where the conflict comes in? Because you have the private equity investors who do want a pared down, more efficient product, which is an understandable argument to take. But it is also a member organization. It's a player-led organization, and those players want playing opportunities. And we just saw over the course of the last few weeks when the fall FedEx season ended, and we were finding out that guys who finished outside of the top 100, we've reduced the number of cards by 25 going into next year. But guys who were finishing, say, 110th, 115th, were being told odds are you're still probably going to get 20-ish starts per year. Well, that's actually pretty close to a full schedule. That's not bad. That's not going to be the case in 2027. If you're taking out tournaments, the number of starts guys are going to get is going to be reduced. And to me, that's really where the balance has to be struck here. What is good for the PGA Tour as a business is not necessarily good for rank and file members. And none of this has yet gone before the Players Advisory Committee, which frankly has been reduced to a rubber stamp authority. That organization has not had a spine ever. And this might be the point where it's actually forced to decide who is making the calls here. Is it the investment side of the business, or is it the player side of the business? It's ripe for conflict in the next couple of years.
It is. And listen, the National Football League had conflict. It's also had change. And I'm just curious, how closely does Brian Rolapp want to mirror the PGA Tour to what we see in the National Football League? And I know scarcity is a part of it. NFL fans, you know, severely miss the league when it's gone. There's this incredible buildup when there's training camp and preseason games, and then every game is important. Rams lose to the Panthers over the weekend, and you know, and that gives the Eagles now a chance to have the first seed in the NFL. Can the PGA Tour follow that, where there's a buildup to a playoff that is digestible, understandable, and meaningful beyond just putting a bunch of zeros on a big check? That's hard to do when you have the Players and the Masters and the PGA and the U.S. Open and the Open Championship that mean so much. In reality, those have been the Super Bowls of golf. So how do you build up to a FedEx Cup finale or something similar that is as impactful and meaningful as those five huge events from the spring throughout the summer? I don't know how you do it. It's a challenge for Brian and company to see if they can figure out something that has as much gravitas as those big-time events in the warmer months.
It also betrays a mindset that's pretty myopic in the sense it's very domestic-oriented, which is fair enough. That's where the PGA Tour's business is.
Yeah.
But if you are going to contract the PGA Tour schedule, there are a couple of caveats to that. Are you then going to attempt to do something outside of the United States in those particular months, say from October, November through January, February? Are you going to ally with the European Tour and play more events and encourage your guys to get more starts outside of the United States and not be competing against the NFL? Mm. Because that's not a problem if you're playing in Australia or the European continent. But it also, it sends a message that's worrisome to the sponsors who have been loyal for years.
Yeah.
Because now the sponsors are out there thinking, well, who's on the hit list here? Who's going to be told to go? And, you know, sponsors do come and go. Erosion is natural. Ejection is a gamble that they're going to take.
Time now for another Golf Today Roundtable. We welcome back Todd Lewis and Gary Williams of Five Clubs on Golf Channel. Hope you guys had a wonderful Thanksgiving. G-Dub, I can't imagine how many mornings we talked about Tiger Woods and kicked around the possibilities of what he might do. We know what a gift that Jack was post 50 and Arnie and Lee and Tom Watson. Are you bullish at all about the prospects of Tiger post 50 if the body is willing to cooperate?
You know, I thought that if the body did cooperate, which we now have more doubt than maybe ever, that he would do, it would be the Jack model. It would be two regular PGA Tour Champions events. I know that he's got a relationship now with Insperity, so that's one satisfied. Play all the senior majors and then maybe one or two of the Schwab Cup Final Series events. I thought that would be the model. I thought it would get started at Scioto, at the U.S. Senior Open, similar to Jack and Lee starting their senior careers. Lee played more frequently at Ridgewood Country Club in 1990. And then I would think 36 years later, that was going to be the case. Now, I think we all have a great deal of doubt as to whether he can play and how frequently he can, guys.
Todd, what about you? We're now into December. It's only 29 days until Tiger becomes eligible to be a ghostly figure on two different tours. Do you expect to see much of him in 2026 on either circuit?
Yeah, I would. I'm kind of in agreement with Gary. I think he's going to play a major or two on the Champs Tour, the senior side. I think he will try to play a tournament or two on the PGA Tour as well, but it's going to have to kind of be the right tournament. I mean, Nona McGay recently said this. Of course, he's his longtime friend and former college teammate at Stanford. It's not necessarily the swing that gets him. It's the challenging walks. Will he be ready for Augusta, which is, a challenging walk? Not sure. The Memorial, another challenging walk at Muirfield Village? Not sure. But, you know, we shall see. But I think he will try. I think he misses coming out and trying to test his game. He's still the competitor that he always was against some of the best. And he's got a closeness with these PGA Tour players now, especially as he tries to fight for the legacy of the PGA Tour, not only against the LIV, but against economics as well moving forward.
Gary, questions about Tiger Woods. There's also questions about the PGA Tour schedule going forward. The new CEO, Brian Rolapp, told CNBC that they're looking at ways to optimize the calendar, in particular spring and summer. How do you do it? Where do you begin? If you get outside of the shadow of football, college and pro, how do you optimize the spring and summer in a constricted schedule?
Damon, to a degree, I think they've already created that optimization of the elevated events. There's a density to those now, and now you've added Miami, and you think about the cadence of all of these big events coming, really starting with the Players in March, and then obviously Masters, and then you have these signature series events that either precede or immediately follow major championships, starting with the Heritage, same thing. You've got Miami, then you've got Charlotte, then you've got the Pete. We already have that. And I heard you guys discussing it. And I think it's interesting as we go into this year thinking we're going to have some real clarity by the middle of the latter part of the year as to what 27 is going to look like. In an effort to get out of the way of the NFL, you can't think you are the NFL. The NFL is who they are. They are the monolith. They are the 800-pound gorilla. So golf, I've never had a problem with the identity of golf. I've never had a crisis about it. Many of these events for the casual fan, whether you want to call it elevator music or wallpaper or innings eaters, but for guys, it's employment. And that is the middle class, which I know he spoke of using that term specifically. I think you can elevate the spring and summer without having to eliminate the bulk of these other events, which I think those storylines and guys who watch this channel and women who watch this channel don't turn away from those stories.
Todd, do you think this is where the potential for conflict comes in between the private equity guys and the players as we do shrink?
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about it. There's going to be all kinds of conflict out here on the PGA Tour for the players that aren't traditionally or haven't been in these signature events where they're playing for, you know, $25 million purses, or they're playing for what is an equally amount, large amount of currency, and that is FedEx Cup points. Yeah, there's already whispers about that. I'm hearing it. I heard it in the fall. I've heard it in the latter part of last season. As some player told me, and I've used it on this program before, some players feel like there is a PGA Tour and a PGB Tour. So, yeah, there's going to be some problems and some conflicts moving forward. And I'll be interested to see, once a plan is put together on how they're going to lay out the 2027 schedule and beyond, which looks like it's going to be fewer tournaments, and that formula is presented to the PAC, which represents the membership on the PGA Tour, that is going to be a very volatile day. That day and moving forward, you're going to hear a lot of voices that are not going to be happy.
Well, few players have represented PGA Tour stardom better than Jordan Spieth, Gary. I spoke to him a couple of weeks ago from his Crush It Cup event in Dallas. He told me he plans to play more golf in 2026. He's going to add the Sony to kick off his new year. Where do you see him at the age of 32 as he tries to get back to being the player that we all remember a decade ago?
Yeah, Damon, I want to believe, and to a degree, I really do. I actually thought 2025, if you go back and you listen to his pre-tournament press conference at Pebble Beach to begin his year of 2025, he was asked a question, I believe it was Gabby Herzig, about goal setting. And he laid out all these various benchmarks that he wanted to try to achieve. And I thought, by and large, he did. He touched leads. One in particular, the idea that he legitimately contended. And most importantly, he didn't have any major physical setbacks, which to me is the most important thing. And here's the last thing about Jordan. Jordan never went through like the clunky phase, like, do I want to be a TikToker? How active do I want to be on social media? He's been an adult since he was 16. I think he has managed to allocate what is required of anybody who has a child, let alone three, that he and Annie now have. I think he's going to win a golf tournament. Where, I have no idea. And look, I could say that about 50 or 60 guys, but he's one of the 50 or 60 that I think has a very good chance to win a golf tournament. And I'll start at Augusta National. He can be in a mummified state and somehow, some way, finishes in the top 10. I thought he had a good 25, and I think he'll have a better 26.
And no doubt thinking about perhaps checking that box at the PGA at Aronimink to become a seventh member of the Career Grand Slam Club. Folks, be sure to tune in to more with Gary Williams. Five clubs every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 8 a.m. Eastern time on Golf Channel. Great conversations with the likes of Gabby Herzig, Johnson Wagner, and Brendan DeYoung.
And we're back now with our Got Today Roundtable, Gary Williams and Todd Lewis joining us. Gary, I want to go back to this schedule question. If there is a contraction with the PGA Tour schedule, in your mind, does that create an opportunity or an obligation for the PGA Tour to work outside of the U.S. in Q4 or even into Q1?
Yeah, Eamon, I wouldn't say obligation, but I would say opportunity. I've been a proponent of them finding other pathways for co-sanctioned events. And certainly there's a convenience associated with the Scottish Open. It makes natural sense. But again, there's got to be reciprocity. There's got to be opportunities for DP World Tour members to come here. And it's not just alternate field events as they do in the middle of the summer. I don't see any reason why there shouldn't be a pathway after Labor Day. And you were making the point that myopically we get out of the way of football, but golf is global, especially men's professional golf. The BMW PGA Championship, the end of the season, whether it's the Dunhill Links. These are very attractive events with very good fields, the best players who represent the DP World Tour, who make the lion's share of their careers on the PGA Tour. Yes, they should absolutely cultivate other opportunities outside of the United States after Labor Day until Thanksgiving.
Todd, what do you think? Similar question, because Rory has often talked about his love of chasing national opens and his belief that those tournaments should be protected, elevated, that they're important. Is there a possibility for the PGA Tour to adopt that mindset and look for more collaboration globally, be it Indian Opens, for example, Australia, Scotland, you know, go around the globe and pick your country?
Yeah, I think that Gary hit the nail on the head. There is an opportunity for the PGA Tour to align with other tours, probably specifically the DP World Tour. But the problem they're going to run into, the PGA Tour, is trying to convince elite American players to step outside the United States and play in these events. I don't understand why these great American players don't go out and play internationally like Rory McIlroy does brilliantly, by the way, more than they do. But that's just kind of been the MO. I mean, Scottie Scheffler, we love Scottie Scheffler. He is a dominant player. He's, whenever he shows up now, he's the top draw. Maybe at least tied with Rory McIlroy if they're in the same tournament. But rarely does he step outside the United States to play big events globally. So I think it is a great opportunity, but they're going to really have to sell it to the elite players, the PGA Tour officials, that is.
Just continuing on that, Gary, Scottie's making his second start since the FedEx Cup ended back in mid-August. Rory is making his sixth start since the FedEx Cup ended. Is there a responsibility on Scottie as the world number one to perhaps show up a little bit more often? I mean, where's the balance between having an off-season, having the rest, and actually fulfilling your obligation as world number one to try to spread the love a little bit around the world?
Yeah, Eamon, it's a flattering ask. There are very few players that I think that they get to a place where we're saying, well, they should play more because they have an audience now. They're an attraction that very few have, because the truth is there's only a handful that actually do sell tickets. You're selling the experience, not the individual. I think his number one responsibility is for him to believe that whatever schedule he has allows him to keep his window of dominance and greatness open as long as he can. And if it's what the current construct of his schedule is, I will have no criticism of it. Similarly to the way that Tiger executed his schedule before him, Jack, he was very particular about the way he went about things. And for anybody bristling going, why are you putting him in that category? Are you not paying attention? He's doing similar things. So, no, I don't think he has an obligation. His obligation is for him to show up and for us to continue to do what we do on Monday mornings. He almost won or he won, because that's what he does every week that he plays.
Well, Tilu, there was a time when Cameron Smith was competing and winning major championships. He just missed the cut at the BMW Australian PGA. He's missed seven cuts in a row, missed all four cuts in major championships, told Golf Digest Australia's Evan Priest that he's confused. He thinks it might be in his head. How much of a loss is his unique style of play for golf fans, considering what he did in 2022, winning the Century, the Players, and the Open?
Look, I think Cam Smith, especially those years that you're talking about, was an elite player. But, I mean, look, he's like several players that were, you know, kind of trending in the right direction and decided to go to live. And for whatever reason, I mean, there are a number of players like that. This didn't quite have the intensity, the fire, the push, maybe because they were being paid so much money, that just kind of, you know, just kind of faded away. I mean, it's not all of them, but I would say a majority of them just really haven't capitalized on the global stage, and they're measured back when they come back in major championships. And yeah, I mean, here we are. I mean, this incredible shot that he hit in the at the road hole at St. Andrews, and we're thinking, man, this guy's going to be a star, and now he's going to take his talents to live golf. But just, I don't know what it is. I don't know what the exact formula is, but when these elite players go to live golf, I'm not saying they're awful players, but they surely aren't the players they were before they left.
Gary, I want to go back a few days. One of the sort of legends in this game died last week, Fuzzy Zeller. Something of a complicated legacy, a two-time major champion whose reputation still had a stain on it from those controversial racial comments he made at the Masters back in 1997. How should Fuzzy Zeller be adequately remembered in your mind?
I think the word you use is the most appropriate one, complicated. I think it is complicated, and it's extraordinary if you think about that time, but you just referenced 1997. It was well in advance of social media, but it was right at the outset of the internet. Now, look, those comments were not populating a space that was not occupied by millions and millions of people, but it didn't take long. And I would say that 12 to 15 second reflexive remark that he gave to somebody who asked him what he would say to Tiger essentially when it was over, because it was merely a coronation on that inward nine, harmed him in a way that I never thought could harm somebody. And again, it was an audible response in a reflexive way. And this is somebody, just for people who are a little bit younger, we just had the skins game. Fuzzy Zeller won the skins game in 1985 and 1986. What does that mean? Well, it means that he was popular enough that the people who were producing that event wanted him in the event. He won the Bob Jones Award 1 year after he won the U.S. Open. This wasn't in the twilight of his career or his life. This was in the heart of his career. That's how popular he was. And in the blink of an eye, he was excommunicated from so many parts of the industry in the ecosystem of golf that I don't think he ever psychologically and intellectually ever recovered from that. Harmed is the way I would look at it. He's a harmed, historically wonderful player.
Tilu, speaking of interviews, Rory McIlroy and Bryson DeChambeau in separate interviews basically said there's no heat, no action in these negotiations between the PGA Tour and LIV nearly some 2 years, more than 2 years, since the framework agreement. Is this just the albatross that's going to hang over professional golf now? Is this just the way it's going to be? What is going on from your perspective and your reporting, if anything?
Well, it's funny. Eamon, I know you were with me when that White House meeting was happening, and we were ready to say there's a framework agreement ready to go, and there are going to be players from LIV Golf. They're going to be competing in the Players Championship, which was a few weeks later, and that just obviously just blew up. It seems to me right now, from what I am feeling and hearing, that these entities are just going to keep going their own path. And there really is zero talk, I mean zero talk, between the PGA Tour and PIF, LIV Golf, about maybe getting together for a meeting just to talk about things and seeing what we could do down the road. So it seems as if the Tour is going the direction they're going under new leadership. And yes, LIV Golf has a new CEO as well. And, you know, they're probably both kind of drinking from a fire hose right now, trying to make sure that their properties are taken care of. But it seems to me that there is nothing in the mix at all in regards to both of these entities trying to come together once again, at least right now.
Yeah, a lot of news coming up from the PGA Tour or LIV from that matter. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Hope you had a great holiday, and thank you for your time on this Monday.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Got it.
There they are, Gary Williams and Todd Lewis. And hey, folks, if you're in the market for a podcast, you can check out the Golf Channel podcast with the likes of Rex Hoggard and Ryan Lavender. If you missed any of Golf Today, you can find our best interviews on the Golf Today podcast. And be sure to subscribe to the Golf Channel YouTube page as well.